Robin Miller, welcome to a belated week in IndyCar news. You have been sick as a dog. I'd love to know how you contracted the bubonic plague in the middle of summer, and I've been embroiled in travel nightmares that had me spend more than half a day trying to get to Road America for the IMSA race this weekend, and got as far as Phoenix and came back. So we weren't really planning on doing this because you were sick and I was traveling, but tell me how you're feeling a little bit better. What have you been doing? What have you been swallowing to get there?
Oh, son, it's just, you should get a cold. Sometimes I can't believe you get a cold in the middle of the summer, but cold and a cough and a fever and all that, but a Z-Pack is the greatest thing ever invented.
Well, I would say it takes a close second to, in terms of greatest inventions. Our friend Linda Rosenberg came up with a certain shirt that has legend on it, that has your lovely face on it, drawn by, I guess he's become your personal artist now, Roger Warwick. Tell me about that surprise last weekend at Mid-Ohio, this lovely Robin Miller tribute shirt, which at least so far isn't available for purchase so people can light them on fire. But tell me about that reaction.
No, it should never be available for purchase. No. Linda's always been the one that when Shunk and I do our t-shirts and our sweatshirts every year, she's the one that helps pick out the colors and the materials, and she's been doing that since the early 90s when she started helping Ganassi. So she's been great for us, and she just decided I think she thought my life expectancy was probably inside of 6 months, and she wanted to have a nice going away present for me. So she heard me coughing, and she made that nice t-shirt.
You got to surprise our boy Max Chilton with a bunch of pre-wedding gifts during the grid run. That was fun to watch. Talk about Joseph Newgarden, Robin. You wrote a really nice column on Monday on Racer about how this kid has truly come of age. And also, you know, we spoke about last weekend that we were a bit surprised that his current employers were as cool and uninterested about him just, you know, a matter of a couple of years ago. But boy, I guess he's enjoying proving them wrong.
I really think that they thought he needed to mature, and I'm sure he did. You know, when Tim Cindric interviewed him, he was 21, and Tim said, well, you know, he crashes a lot. Well, yeah, trying to keep up the Penske team on a one-car effort, he did. But, my God, you could just tell the guy had it. Everybody could. And I think maybe they just thought, well, we're going to wait till he gets to a certain age, and then we're going to snap him up. And Penske's... You know, when's the last American driver they had? Was it Hornish, maybe? Sam was probably their last. Yeah, so, you know, Penske needs a good American race driver. And Newgarden is, you know, you've talked about it. We've both written about it. I mean, he's the most Penske perfect driver in terms of personality, media savvy. Fans love him. Great teammate. Good feedback with his engineer. And he's just, you know, he's got 3 wins. And he's right there fighting for the championship. And I think what's interesting is that, you know, everybody says there's this period that you've got to get used to being a Team Penske guy. I mean, it took, you know, what Pagano didn't win a race his first year, and then he won the championship the second year. But Newgarden's a special talent. I think everybody probably has, in the last 2 or 3 years, has understood that when he was running so well for Sarah and Ed.
Another thing that I'm growing to appreciate about him, Robin, and granted, this is... It's the early stages of this appreciation, so I'm not throwing this out as it being a fact and he's all the way there, but... He is reminding me of Scott Dixon in some ways, particularly in his lack of complication. You can look at our friend Will Power, who's a nut, who we love, but we know that there's always a ton of stuff swimming around in his head, and if he can focus everything, the guy's lights out, just devastating. Pagano, very much a thinker, been trying more and more to tap into that animalistic side of his personality. Even he admits this, the more he's able to do that on those days, we see him just as a raging animal. Elio, always been very consistent. At times, he's able to be that monster, but you know he's always there, thereabouts. Dixon, someone who, you know, we joke about, looks like he wakes up 5 minutes before the race, goes out and performs miracles. I like this about Joseph, and I'm not saying that he's dumb. I don't mean that. That's not what I'm saying in terms of his lack of complication, but... Smart kid, intuitive kid, always looking for something to improve himself, but there's just this sense of simplicity about him when it comes to driving. I think that's a reason why he's been so impressive so quickly, that rather than let his head get twisted up in 20 different directions, he has that ability, like Dixon, to just truly shut out the stuff that doesn't matter and get down to business. Have you seen inklings of that as well?
Well, yeah. I mean, I just remember some people were saying the first race or two, geez, you know, Newgarden's struggling. Well, no, he actually finished fourth in the first race, and he ran pretty good in the second. It's like, folks, he's got a new engineer, a new team, a new way to do business, and that's what Paul Tracy was saying on the telecast last week, and he said, you know, this kid, you come into a Penske environment, it's a whole different animal. You got all these employees and all these expectations and all these different ways to do things, and he's just, I mean, he's adapted as probably as quickly and as good as you can do. I mean, I listed some of the guys like Rick Mears, Danny Sullivan. I mean, guys that had instant success, you know, right away, and then guys that took a while, like PT and like Pagano. But Newgarden's just he's everything that you. I think he's probably everything you want, because when he was with Sarah and Ed's team, I mean, suddenly, it didn't matter if it was an oval, a road course, or a street course. He was right there. And when you think about, you know, that I don't think anybody that paid any, you had to just had to be impressed the last 2 years. And I think, you know, I think that's what probably, I mean, Penske knew, you know, they needed an opening. And I'm not sure Montoya was, I'm sure he still doesn't think he should have, you know, he was ready. But even Montoya said he understood because of Newgarden's age and the availability and just the way things were, it was the timing was right.
A couple other closing items as we get ready to leave Mid-Ohio. Another strange weekend for Chip Ganassi Racing, where we look at, for the most part, I mean, other than Dixon having some pace at some point, the team really did not feature that much, especially during the race itself. You look at Dixon, ninth, definitely, you know, he has consecutive finishes after winning Road America, consecutive finishes of 8th, 10th, and 9th. Just, it's not often you see a kind of middle-of-the-road, meh, kind of streak like that from Dixie at any point. You look at our boy Tony Kanaan, 16th, again, not, you know, I know he wanted more. Max Chilton, 15th, and Charlie Kimball, 13th, so just a little strange to have the entire Ganassi team clustered from 9th to 16th at a track where, you know, they are often very quick. And then you counter that with someone like Graham Rahal, who, again, top Honda guy, single car, really, you know, achieving well above expectations. You look at Andretti, another nice surprise. Takuma Sato, top qualifier for the team, top finisher in 5th. Alexander Rossi, 6th. We know that Ryan Hunter-Reay could have been higher. He rallied back to finish 8th after he and Rossi came together. So just a little bit of a different weekend. Our boy Spencer Pigot, who we're usually heaping lots of praise on to, big mistake in morning warm-up Sunday morning, tub the thing. Team had to go to a backup car. He finished 19th. Jerry Hildebrand finished 17th after, you know, the latest complaint from teams about the pits being closed and that farting around with race strategy. So not surprised to see Penske go and kick butt, finish 1-2. Not a big surprise to see Graham do well in his home race, but definitely a little bit of a surprise to see the Ganassi team, when Dixon's really the only one in the hunt, fall from first to third in the standings, really not have much to offer in terms of a fight towards the front. And, you know, pressure continued to build as we leave towards Pocono. Cool thing was on Monday, Robin, Sebastian Bourdais climbed back into a car for the first time in 72 days, which, you know, we'd normally be thinking it'd be 172 days, but that guy's a freak. How awesome is that to see that a guy later in his life, later in his career, is really fighting and pushing to get back into an Indy car as soon as he can, at a time where, you know, he could easily say, this IndyCar stuff is way too crazy, way too dangerous. I could go be a highly paid sports car driver for the next 10 years. I don't know. I just think it's really cool to see how much IndyCar means to him, as demonstrated by how hard he's pushed to get back in this car.
Well, not to mention, I mean, he called it. He said, I'll be back before the season's over, after we heard that he might be out. And the fact that he pushed himself as quick as he goes out of the hospital and rehabbing so fast. But, you know, I think his big goal was, I don't want to spend the winter talking about whether I can be back or not. I just want to go back and run. And when you did your interview and your story with him after he ran, I mean, it was pretty impressive. He ran most of a four-hour day, and did he have a little neck problem maybe at the end? But everything else was pretty damn good, it looked like.
Other good news, you were able to, thankfully, you were able to catch up with our boy, Mr. Monterior, and Jay Fry, after IndyCar did its first road course test with his 2018 Bodywork the High Downforce package. It was cool getting some texts from folks there while it was taking place. I was essentially out the middle of the week tending to some good family stuff, but it was just cool hearing feedback about, hey, these things are sliding around a little bit and guys are really having to get up on the wheel, and this is bringing back some fond memories. What did you hear from folks after the test was over and you were putting together your report?
I think just the fact that when Juan voluntarily says, man, I was driving the hell out of that thing, it was fun, I was sliding through the corner and you're going faster down the straightaway, and he goes, I think you're going to be able to follow guys a little closer. And he said, I just think the whole thing's going in the right direction. Now, here's a guy that might not even have a ride even at the Indy 500 next year, but he's doing the testing, and I think he's certainly hoping he has a ride because he had a good time running the car. Service said the same thing when you read his quotes. And I think for those guys, you know, fans are funny. They're always like, oh, this new car is great. Well, it's not a new car. It's the same car, and it's the same engine. It's just a new look, and it's a new body kit, and the aerodynamics are going to be different by 2018. And all that stuff's great. But I think Bill Pappas, Tino Belli, I think they've done a nice job of, like Jay Fry's favorite word is checking off another box, and that's exactly what that test was. And everybody in the paddock seems pretty optimistic, that's very unusual, and that's the way this whole car has been.
Another aspect of that I like, Robin, and I know that this is something you and I have discussed on our own. I love IndyCar's choice of having Montoya in one car and Servia in another. You know, you might say, well, who else are they going to get? Everyone else is super busy. Sage Karam would have loved to have been in a car, a Tristan Vautier, a Gabby Chavez. You know, there are plenty of the younger drivers who could be doing this testing, but I love the fact they've chosen a couple of older drivers who have that kart experience and can tell you firsthand what it is like to drive a 1,000-horsepower car at Mid-Ohio, at wherever, and then throwing them into these new 2018 bodywork cars, because although we don't have that 1,000-horsepower, you and I have listened to Montoya, listened to Servia many times talk about, man, I wish these cars had more something from the past, more acceleration, just something. They aren't as exciting and as visceral as the old kart cars were. It's been really cool to hear them talk about, especially coming out of this Mid-Ohio test, where by reducing the downforce and by, you know, improving the drag so that there's more straight line speed, we do have cars that, while they aren't cracking a million miles an hour in the straight line, when you hear these old guys who just light up when we have these kart discussions, when you see that same kind of lighting up and the quotes are genuine and honest about, wow, this was really made me feel like I was back in the days, that's the thing that I love. That's where I think, again, IndyCar did a really good job in choosing who they decided to put in the cars, because they have the context of what our favorite most recent era was like and how close either this new bodywork is or isn't going to bring it towards what we know is a really good formula. So big kudos to them there. So leaving the road course test, Robin, it's been cool to look at, as you mentioned, the reaction both within the paddock. I think most fans are thoroughly impressed with what IndyCar has come up with visually. As we spoke about last week, and again, I'm going to get to writing this as soon as I'm able, there's definitely a next step. What's going to happen next in the future? Is IndyCar going to add more technology? Think that could definitely be coming down the pipeline. We know it's something senior folks within the organization are very, very aware of and recognize that something needs to happen there. It's just a question of time. But if we look at least finishing out where we're going to end up at the end of 2017, before we move into all that new bodywork, we had a cool test yesterday at Gateway, super gripped up with brand new track. Tell me about that as well, because you spoke with drivers who seemed to love what they had. Don't know if everyone had a universal opinion in one direction or the other, whether we should be looking forward to a lot of passing, though. What were your takeaways from all that, Robin?
Well, Hinch said when they tested there in the spring that when it was rough and bumpy that you were having to double downshift going into one and hit the brake a little bit. And Connor Daly, who was riding back with Hinch from Gateway, and they had my own speakerphone, so I could talk to both of them, said, I mean, Connor had the second fastest lap of the day at 25 flat, and Elio was a half a second clear of the field. And he said he's pretty sure Elio was running wide open through one. And the whole key, it looks like when they go back, how much can you trim, and gearing, obviously. So, but everybody seemed to think, even though it's really super fast, and they raved about the paving job. I mean, Ryan Hunter Ray said it was like Indy; it's that smooth. Ed Carpenter had said a long time ago, look, no matter what happens, if you can get a runoff of two, you're going to be, there's maybe a chance you could get somebody going to three, but if not, you're wide open in three and four, and then coming down the main straightaway, that's probably going to be your best opportunity going into one. And Hunter Ray has, you know, he basically said, I don't think it's necessarily going to be as bad as Phoenix. It might not be quite as good as Iowa the first time, but we got a chance. He goes, I just think we have a chance to do some passing. But he said, we really didn't get a chance, you know, because of the rain cutting everything short. We really didn't get a chance to run together and to really tell. So it's kind of an unknown going back. But, you know, they were happy with the tires and they were really happy with the track. And then, you know, I mean, Connor had a good setup in the spring, and it's obviously carried forward to this new track. It's just that Hunter Ray couldn't have been more spot on about these guys, Curtis and the people, the Bomarito Auto people that are the title sponsor of the race. They've been advertising in Indianapolis for the last month, and they've really, I mean, Hinch said, you know, Graham and I went to a press day, and I went to the St. Louis Sports Commission one day with Curtis, and he goes, these guys are really enthusiastic, and they're really trying hard to make this thing work. So that's exactly what's, you got to have that, especially when a place you haven't been to in 13 years. But Hunter Ray said probably the best, you know, we've got to make sure this is a good show. You can't be gone as long as we haven't come back, and you just have to put on a good show. And I think, you know, I think they're pretty optimistic. I mean, I saw Graham, I didn't get to talk to him, but I saw a quote from him that said, I think there's going to be plenty of passing. So, you know, maybe there will be, and that'd be great. That's all we want to see. You just want some overtaking. That's why ovals are fun.
I think you raise a great point there, Robin. IndyCar, they need to be hyper proactive, but also I'd say a little bit fearful about the health and longevity of the full oval package that we have each season. I mean, we're down, if we're looking at a 16 to 17 race calendar, you know, ovals are, they're not just less than half, they're kind of in that 30-ish to 40% of the calendar range most of the recent years. You know, Phoenix was a stinker. Everyone told IndyCar it was going to be a stinker. IndyCar had everything they needed to know before the race to realize it was not going to be good. And for two straight years, it was a garbage race with almost no passing. We know that Indy definitely was pretty crazy and fun. Texas is definitely wild. Iowa always delivers, but then you go to a gateway where, you know, it has a potential of not being that spectacular. It's been a little while since Pocono, at least in my opinion, really delivered. Was, you know, wow, remember what happened there. So when you don't have that many ovals on the schedule, you really cannot afford to ignore the feedback from the engineers, from the drivers, because, you know, again, they're just, if you don't have that many to begin with, just goofing up one or two, it has a pretty negative impact. Another thing coming out of Mid-Ohio, Robin, which is maybe not so much specifically a Mid-Ohio thing, but just looking at the, we're really down to the final stages of the Indy Lights champion. We know that a kid is going to win $1 million, going to get that advancement prize. We'll do the Indy 500 in a couple of races, maybe, you know, hopefully put a full budget together using that advancement prize like Ed Jones did. Bit of a weird weekend, though, in that Kyle Kaiser, who was really on a hot streak, looking like he was going to run away with things, almost didn't know he was there. Just had two terrible days, Saturday and Sunday. Finished, you know, well out of any meaningful position. We had Colton Herta, who was really strong on Saturday. We had Santi Arusha, who's had a very streaky year adjusting with a new team. He was able to win on Saturday. On Sunday, Colton was leading, spun on his own. Nico Jamin went on, did a really strong job there. Shelby Blackstock had a good weekend. In this kind of weird place, Robin, where unlike last year, where it was Jones or Arusha who was going to win, and we knew either of those kids was going to be pretty darn, you know, badass if they got to IndyCar. Year before that, Spencer Pigot was obviously doing some pretty amazing things. So you've gotten to the final stages of the Indy Lights Championship the last couple of years. There's been one or two, you know, easily identifiable badasses really getting ready to step up to IndyCar. I'm not saying there aren't badasses in Indy Lights. I'm just looking at who could be winning the championship and moving up next year, and I'm still waiting for someone to make a statement. Kyle Kaiser started off the year a little bit soft, rallied, and disappeared last weekend. Matthias Leist, who's new to the championship, really rose up in the somewhat of the middle of the season, then has fallen off just a little bit recently. Colton Herta made a strong impression, has tapered off a bit. Aaron Tielitz started strong, has tapered off a bit. Some have risen up since then. Nico Jamin's been all over the map. A lot of the time, not his fault, sometimes his fault. Just a bit weird for me, Robin, to look at the fact that we're going to crown an Indy Lights champion. We expect that kid to come up to IndyCar. I just don't know if anyone's raised their hand yet coming out of 2017 to say, look out for me next year. To some degree, it feels like we're almost limping into a champion compared to someone making a decisive statement. What are your thoughts about that? Because it does matter how you win a Lights Championship, doesn't it?
Everybody's been so hot and cold all year. I mean, when the season started, I kept telling Brian Herta, my God, this kid's going to win this thing the first year, and he's going to win every race. And he's going, well, thankfully, reality came back, and the Steinbrenner team is a great addition to IndyCar and to the Mazda Road to Indy. But you know, he's a kid. He's just a teen. He's experienced loose cars on an oval, and he spun leading, I think, the other day, and he's been on the pole, and it's just part of the growing process and the learning process. And Brian Herta has been very clear. He goes, this kid's not ready for an Indy car. He needs at least 2 years in lights. So you're not cheering against him to win it because he's a second generation name that's really done well in every series he's been in. But you know, you got a guy like Kaiser, this is going to be his shot. He needs to win this probably to ever have a chance at IndyCar. And who know? I mean, you said it the best. I mean, it's just everybody's all over the board every week. You don't go to a weekend thinking, oh, this is the guy you're going to have to. This guy is going to rule this weekend. You got to make sure you got this guy on your radar because you don't know who it's going to be.
Well, speaking of, you don't know who it's going to be. We're not going to delve into silly season too much here as we wrap the week in IndyCar news. But this has been a fun post-race week, I should say, coming out of Mid-Ohio. You've heard from a lot of people. I've heard from a lot of people. You kick things off with a great part one to the silly season. We both put together a part two last weekend, which I think cracked open the door on a lot of things that are moving. But in the 4 or 5 days since, we've found that things just continue to move and continue to move. That's kind of the fun part, right, Robin? I mean, these are the folks that we work with. We cheer them all on. We hope they have long and successful careers. It's also kind of interesting to see how things are developing. And one day, this driver's going here. The next day, this team's expanding to an extra car. Then the next week, they're actually dropping down to one less. Do you enjoy the fact that things are just in such a amazing state of flux right now, because this is crazier than I can recall, at least in many, many years.
Well, I think it's good for IndyCar because it's a great way between races to keep people engaged. The fans love it. I mean, Tony Kanaan was in town the other night and we had dinner and we spent the first 45 minutes just trying to figure out, okay, what about this? What do you think about this? The drivers are just like we are. They want to know. They're as keen to know what's going on as anybody because a lot of times they're kept in the dark and a lot of their careers are hanging in the balance. Okay, where am I going to be? What's going to happen to me? And I just think that, like a couple months ago, maybe it didn't seem like there was going to be quite anything like this. And now it's one of the most. It's probably got more chance of being a different lineup next year. 8 out of 21 guys actually have a ride secured for next year, and everything else is up for grabs. And I think I'm not sure that's. It's not necessarily great for the drivers that are involved because, you know, security is nice to have. But I think for the fans, it's they love it.
So we'll close on the one little fun bit. This is a rumor that's been going around for a couple weeks maybe about a certain Spanish driver who made a big wave by jumping into the Indy 500 for the first time this year that he could be coming back for the season finale at Sonoma. Spoke with our friend Zach Brown at McLaren a couple days ago and got some direct input on that. So we know something is happening. with the Andretti team at Sonoma. And so hopefully we can report definitively on what is coming next week. So with that little bit wrapping up the week, Robin, keep taking your meds.
That's called a teaser in television. You just teased them. That's a teaser.
Well,
that's good.
Well, I didn't want to say that because if you tell people you're teasing them, then they get mad at you.
No, they don't. They like being teased.
All right. Well, take more drugs. I'm going to get some sleep after getting home at 3:32 in the morning from traveling everywhere and nowhere. And hopefully, I don't know, we've got a little bit of time until we get to Pocono, the next IndyCar round on August 20th. So maybe by the end of next week, maybe early the following, we'll have a third installment of our silly season fun. And other than that, get some rest, Miller. I'm going to do the same.
Okay, brother. Talk to you next week.